speaker is Bridget, who I am so excited to hear her share her experience, strength, and hope. I hear she's been around a while, and I ran into her like just the other night, and I'm not sure if I had heard her before or not. So I'm really, really looking forward to hearing her story, and she sounds like she will give us a lovely experience, strength, and hope here. Bridget, please come on up and share your story with us. Thanks so much.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? Give me a why. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Lydia, for that very warm welcome. And yes, I'm a nicotine addict as well, and my name is Bridget. And there is my, Sparky's almost my twin. We quit around the same time. I think Sparky's, I'm ahead of Sparky by about four weeks or something, very, very close. Anyway, look, I'm just absolutely delighted to be here, and thank you so much. Thank you so much, Lydia, for asking me to share today, because it is an absolute privilege and a delight to share a bit of my story, and I'll try and be as brief as possible and as succinct as I can be. I just want to thank you, those people who've given service today and opening the room and being here. And I'd particularly like to welcome any newcomers to the PAL Talk today, Nicotine Anonymous. Are there any newcomers in the room? I just wondered if there is. I think we did welcome someone, didn't we? Okay, no, maybe not. I just thought for a moment we did. Ah, okay, right, so it's just you old hands then, eh? All right then. Well, being here today, and I feel tears of joy, and I guess they come from the bottom of my heart, because my life is how it is today because I'm free from nicotine, and I have a whole new life, an absolutely, not the old life polished up, it's an absolute new life, and it simply would not be this way if you had not passed on the gift of smobriety to me. And that happened, that my sobriety date, just to claim my seat, is the 10th of the 10th, 2009. So that was the first, that was the beginning of this. There was a lot before that, though, so we'll talk about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. Wow, it's such a privilege to be here. Like most people, and my story won't be that different from others, I could not quit on my own, and I had tried every which way and every excuse, every tool, every promise, every gimmick out there on the market to quit. And I don't know how many times that I had, it would be more than on two hands, you know. It was probably close to 100 times. Well, it would probably be more. That's it. I'm not going to buy the next packet, or that's it. I'd stub that goddamn cigarette out, and I'd say not one more, that's it. And I'd wake up the next day, and it would be the first thing on my mind, and it would be all over before I even opened my eyes, I reckon. So I'm an addict. I'm a nicotine addict through and through. I didn't start out that way. Didn't start out imagining that the success of my life would be a total and unadulterated addiction to that drug, the nicotine. And when I was about 13 or 14, going to school in the country, I was a little country girl, and going on the school bus, sort of like a half-hour trip to the closest high school, there were the cool girls on the back of the bus. There was one in particular, and she always had cigarettes, and they were always smoking down the back of the bus. Those were the days, because good grief, be no smoking on buses now, but in those days, it happened. And I just wanted to fit in. I just, the cool girls, they just, it was just an elusive attraction to me. They just the way they walked and talked and smoked. And down the back of the bus was where I had my first puff on a cigarette. And I just wanted to fit in. I just wanted to be a part of the crowd. I wanted to belong. You know, I had a sense of emptiness without that. I didn't think of myself as complete in those times. And that cigarette, I'll never forget it, that nicotine stick, because the few puffs that I took, I was so sick. I felt so nauseous. And, you know, with the motion of the bus and the smoke and there were about three of us dragging on it, so it had this long red hot ember, and it was sickening to me, and I just about vomited, and I felt nauseous and dizzy, and I believe any non addict, any non nicotine addict who that would happen to would be repulsed to the one, but for me that was oh my goodness, I wanted more, I wanted the next one. And so that's how it began, and it grew into a fully blown addiction. Nicotine was with me in all things. I was reflecting on that yesterday. Nicotine was my was my man, you know, if you like. It was like a marriage, and that was the closest thing to me, the nicotine. It was with me everywhere and everything I did, from the time I woke up to the time I went to sleep, and in the night, if I would wake up, I would have a couple. It's bizarre to look back and to think that's how I lived. I was chained to that nicotine, and goodness. So just to briefly kind of share a little bit more on the things I tried to do to quit on my own power, and that really started in my teens. You know, I would try and go a day without nicotine, and it was excruciating. And I look back and think, of course it would be, because I didn't have any program. I didn't have any 12-step recovery program. It was impossible. So I was trying to stop, really, from the first few years that I started. And I understand now that's part of the journey I needed to go on, was to see that my own attempts and my own ideas simply didn't work. And God, you know, I don't know how many times I tried those patches, and I'd whack them on for a few days, and sometimes I'd get a few weeks up, you know. Invariably, I would believe that lie, which is the most powerful lie I've ever been told, that I can just have one puff, just one puff. And it simply was it's simply a lie I don't entertain today. I don't even think about I don't even remember half the time that I was a nicotine addict. It's cunning, isn't it? So I used to believe that lie, and the next one would be in my mouth and away I'd go. I don't know how many times, I think it might have been 3 or 4 times over the years that I tried to quit using hypnosis. Hypnosis was a good one. I remember one time, I was only about 22, and I went along to this hypnotist, and I sat there and went through the, and I could swear I could have got up and walked out if I'd wanted to. I don't think he hypnotized me at all, but anyway, apparently he hypnotized me so I would never smoke again, and I walked out and went across the road to the, you know, what do you call it in America, the dairy where you buy, you know, sweets and smokes and milk and bread and butter, just a little shop on the corner. And I bought a packet of smokes and lit up. It was like I wasn't even smoke-free for 10 minutes. So that was a bit hilarious. And all the swearing off and, you know, promises to myself and promises, you know, this is probably the most shameful part of my addiction, is that when my little boy, that was in the early 90s, I used to get him to go down to the shop and buy my cigarettes for me, and I used to smoke in the house, and I used to smoke in the car, and that little fellow, he suffered from all of that, and that was awful. That was an awful thing to do. It was just that's just an example. I wanted to give you an example of the selfishness of my addiction. And of course I knew that I was doing that. However, the total rationalization and the selfish self-centeredness of my addiction always put me first in using. And yeah, that little fella developed a little bit of a asthma as a result of that in the later years, you know. And it's very humbling to be able to share that with you and not actually have the terrible feeling of guilt and shame anymore, because thanks to the 12 steps, that kind of stuff has been amended and I'm free of that, and whilst never forgetting, humbled by it, I see where this addiction took me in terms of the way I behaved in my relationships. So that was some more of what it was like. And over the years, things came and things went, but nicotine was always with me. And, you know, I put down the other main, what do we call it, the mother. I came to another 12-step program, and that's where I started to hear about 12-step recovery. And in my search for the solution to my nicotine addiction, I started to reach out to Nicotine Anonymous in the early 2000s, and I got some literature, like I sent away for our 24-hour reader, and I sent away for our book, the basic text, and I thought I could do it on my own. You know, I thought I'll just read that and I'll be right. it takes the three arms of the triangle and the circle, you know, of recovery. And anyway, I just thought I could do that on my own. And of course I kept smoking. And then I reached out and joined, I found someone through the, emails, our pen pal outreach through World Service. And that joker He proved to be the linchpin that anchored me into Nicotine Anonymous, and he carried the message so profoundly to me, so thoroughly to me, so convincingly. You know when it's like one nicotine addict or another nicotine addict, I got hope, because you know what I'm referring to and what it was like is that there was a hopelessness and a pitiful demoralization. Like I was getting to the end of the road at the end of my using of nicotine. I just didn't think it was going to happen for me. And my mum passed away from a lung cancer, which was unrelated to nicotine, a smoking cancer. It was the other lung cancer. And she'd been a very healthy woman who hadn't had any addictions, and it was devastating that she died from this. And yet that was one of my major, it was like a major moment of clarity. I'd been linked into my now Nicotine Anonymous, what he'd become as my sponsor, without that being like formally stated, I don't think. And I'd been dialoguing with him for some time. I don't know how long it was now, maybe a year even. And I'd had a few attempts, and I'd got a few weeks up, and then I would relapse. And but because he was in my life, he just encouraged me to say, keep coming back, and talked it through, and talked about what happened before I picked up, talked about the thinking that had occurred, because what I discovered was that, yes, the pickup occurs in the mind before I actually pick up. And we used to just talk through that, so I again that I could have another attempt. And I didn't, you know, it wasn't like just there was nothing else, so I just kept coming back. And it was actually a month before my mother, it was approximately a month before my mum passed away. That's right. I'm sorry, I haven't thought about this stuff for a long time. It was about a month before my mum passed away that her diagnosis had convinced me, that it was like the final convincer that gave me that impetus. It was something about knowing that she wasn't going to be in the world with me. It was like she was one of my emotional enablers. And with the advent of her about to pass from this physical plane, I just surrendered in another way that I had not had the capacity to surrender. And I put the nicotine down on the 10th. Of the 10th, 2009. And then what happened was, I was linked in to my sponsor. I had some literature. You know, I was speaking to my sponsor every day by email. This is before flash phones or any of that. It was just all by email. And I got 3 days into this quit. And my mum was in the hospice, and I was staying with my son, because this was happening in another country. This was happening in New Zealand, and my home country is Australia now. And I'd been over in New Zealand with her passing, and it got to, I was 3 days into this quit, you know, and something made me angry, and anger is the one emotion that I have consistently, in the past, I had consistently picked up over. Break so many quits. I'd get, call it what you like, you'd call it frustration, irritable, upset, basically it's anger. And I would go, you know, stuff it, or another expletive. Stuff it and pick up nicotine again. Anyway, I was at this 3-day point, and I was desperate. I knew I knew I couldn't afford to have it. I'd had no more quits left in me. It was like the end of the end of the end. I could not do it again. I just knew that if I... And I had this anger, and I was down. I'd gone down to the corner shop, and I'd bought a packet, and I was so frightened. All that was between me and the next puff was the cellophane around that packet, and I was just so close. And I desperate and emailed my sponsor, thinking I've just got to get it out. I've just got to reach out, and I reached out, and he was on his emails at the time in America, and he emailed me back, so it was like we were in real time before you could have real time conversations. And so I got an email back, and then I just let it all out. I don't even know what I was angry about now. Isn't it ridiculous? I just don't remember at all. And but I was able to just release that emotion and release whatever nonsense thinking that was with it at the time, and then it passed, and I hadn't picked up, and that was the turning point. And at the time in that conversation, he said, it's about time you got to these meetings of Voices of Nicotine Recovery. And up until then, I hadn't been really willing to go into the meetings because I thought, nah, I don't really need them. And at that point, I realized I need to get into the meetings. And I didn't have any, ethical skill at all. I didn't know how I was going to get in. And just the instructions to get into one of these meetings would overwhelm me. Anyway, somebody very kindly talked me through into my first meeting of Power Talk, Nicotine and Voices of Nicotine Recovery. And the feeling of meeting you all, and the feeling of being a part of the herd, it was like a total spiritual experience, because you were the good orderly direction. You were the group. You were like, you represented the power greater than me. And I just, it was my turning point, and I just felt home. I felt home with my people, my herd. And I heard the message to stay in the middle of the herd, and I did. And, you know, I've got pictures in my mind of myself, because I was at my son's, as I said, and my mum was passing away, and he would be off at work during the day, and I would just sit at the dining table. Most days I didn't even get out of my dressing gown pajamas. I would just sit in every meeting, and I just drank coffee. I drank as much coffee as I jolly well wanted to. And I just knew that I just stayed in these meetings, and I listened, and I met you, and I heard the encouraging all of the encouragement that we give one another in here. And you guys knew exactly what I was going through, and I'd never had that experience. I'd been a lone wolf with my nicotine addiction. I never met anyone who had quit except for my sponsor. And you, to me, this is what happened. You suggested to me that I do service, and boy, did I get amongst that. I learned how to get one of those little A's, learned how to co-chair, then I got my A. I was so proud. And I just loved giving service, because it was keeping me, sober. And I met you all, and I love you all in such a profound way, and it was made in heaven, and you replaced the need for my nicotine, and you taught me how to live a moment at a time. I remember those first days were really just moment by moment by moment, and I remember somehow knowing not to get out of the moment, just to stay in today, and nothing else mattered. this was my primary purpose, was to get off this drug. And I didn't worry about anything else. I just didn't. In a way, my life stopped, but because of the focus that I gave this thing, and I don't really see that there was any other way for me. I had to completely focus on this 100% because it was killing me. And I knew when I saw my mother passing away, it was that I also knew, I saw the glimpse of my own mortality. But, you know, in saying that, don't get me wrong, I'd seen all the packets of, nicotine death sticks. They have the pictures of people, lungs, black lungs, and people with, you know, laryngectomies, having to speak through their throats, and all of those nasty, nasty pictures they show us. And I didn't care. I didn't give a, you know, it didn't, if I wanted to smoke, I smoked. So those kind of scare tactics never worked for me as a nicotine addict. Wouldn't matter to me. And I also can say to you that I'm a registered nurse, and I knew all of the wrongs, and I saw all of the people coming through the wards with the various diagnoses associated with their use of nicotine and smoking. It didn't matter a hoot to me because first and foremost, I was a nicotine addict. It wouldn't have mattered whether I was the Surgeon General. If I'm a nicotine addict, that was my drug of choice. And that's so I can see the power of the addiction in my past, and I can see the power of what the solution gave me. And you held the solution in these rooms, and of course the fellowship wouldn't have kept me, this beautiful fellowship, as much and all as I love this sense of belonging and being a part of the herd, that wouldn't have kept me sober either, because as you know, I was required to have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and those aren't just words on a banner on a wall. I needed to take them off of the page and put them into my heart, into my spirit, into my life. And I have, one day at a time, committed to that. And I believe that's the change. That is the change. I could not, because you see, I recognize that once I put the nicotine down, guess what? Bridget had to deal with Bridget. I had to uncover and look myself dead in the eye in the mirror and go, okay, now we're getting to the bottom of it. And it required rigorous honesty. And that didn't happen overnight. It's been a very, very long period of reconstruction for me. And I had a lot of old ideas, and I had a lot of old behaviors. I was such a drama queen. Oh, my God. I had no idea the dramas I created in life. I was always blaming other people. It was always someone else, some other situation, some excuse for why things didn't work out for me. Oh, it was such a load of nonsense. And I really get that today. And the steps allowed me, particularly, as you know, the fourth step allowed me to see my part and to see my self-centeredness and my nature as an addict. And this is the miracle that really occurred after I dated that person. I suppose I could have just stayed dependent on meetings and just not done the steps, but I wouldn't have changed. I would have just kept getting what I got, and my life was not happy. And I feigned happiness. Everyone can feign it. I had a desire for life. And that desire for life and wellness and health and healing, it didn't just transfer into that physical health. And as you know, we start to feel better physically really quickly. It was my emotional health that, I knew that if I knew because I was, had some education in the other fellowship, I knew that if I did not face my emotional, health and emotional through the spiritual program of the actions of the steps, that I would keep getting what I had kept getting, what is that saying? If you keep doing what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. So, long period of reconstruction will be. That journey has not ended simply because I arrive at any destination, because there isn't one. It's this beautiful unfolding of life. And it is an adventure in living now. And it is the ability to be a member of a fellow of mine who came, he's from America. He used to say, "I'm just another bozo on the bus." And that's what it feels like. I'm a bozo on the bus of life, and I'm not bigger than, less than, better than, better than or less than. It's being able to be a part of and be a part of the group and part of the group conscience, and you've helped me learn how to be a part of other group consciences, in terms of my life. I can be so much more, I can contribute so much more to life because I've not got these character defects running my life. 6 and 7 have been powerful tools to surrender that and allow the higher power to change me. Because, let's face it, folks, if I could have changed myself, I would have never come here. I would have just done it myself, just like I used to try and quit the nicotine myself. And I couldn't change myself. I've learned the miracle of that 6 and 7 where God as I understand him, will remove these things and shape me into who he would have me be. And it's a journey now for me of that continuing to strengthen that relationship with that power deep down within, become the keystone of my life. That relationship, and of course my God talks through other human beings, which is marvelous. I'm not the expert anymore. I've learned you've taught me how to share and how to reach out and how to talk things through and reason things out. I'm not the be all and end all, and this is a very good place to live from. So there's been multiple benefits, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically to this journey for me. And like I mentioned before, most of the time I don't even think about I forget. And it talks about that in our literature, doesn't it? That we do forget. And so, when it comes around to an anniversary for me, which recently happened with the 10th of the 10th, 2016, which is the 7th year of my sobriety, just reminded me to come back and thank you. Because really my thanks is at the feet of Nicotine Anonymous and the Voices of Nicotine Recovery. One of the issues down under, we don't
there just aren't any face-to-face meetings. There are very, very few people who have gotten SMOBA through these rooms down under. And there was a fella I bumped into a few months ago now, I just happened to be in one of our rooms, and Sparky was teaching him how to chair to get his A, to get his hat, and he was from down under, and I reached out to him, but I haven't, I never heard back, so that's okay, that doesn't matter. The point is that you were my lifeline, these rooms were my lifeline, and this technology is absolutely amazing in the way that it can carry the message right around the world. You don't have to be in America. We can be anywhere in the world. And I know that we've got members who are in all places in the world. So this is a very strong arm of service that you offer. And I can't thank you enough, because I've got my life back. And like I said at the beginning, it's not just the old life polished up, it's a brand new life. And I do a lot of service in my life. You've taught me that life is about service. It's just about giving back. It's just about being present to love. And that's what you've allowed me to have. I can be present to the love I'm present to the love in my life, and I just got, there's just this feeling of having so much to give back, like that's my job, to pay it forward, and I do that in every way I can, and it's with a sense of desperation that I do that today. The gift of desperation has changed form, and that I just love to love, and I want that desire to give is present, and it's come from this fellowship. It's come from this 12-step recovery program. You've taught me everything. I did not know how to structure my life. I tried so many times to create life, and to create the idea of what I thought I was supposed to do, and it would fall down, and I would pick up, and God willing, I need never smoke again. I need never pick up that first puff. However, I recognize that is a daily commitment to vigilance in my spiritual program. It is not a theory. I have to live it. And to the best of my ability, I have that willingness today in my heart. And that's all you told me I needed to have, was willingness, open-mindedness, and the honesty you've taught me how to be an adult. You know, cripple, really, was a kid in so many ways. You've actually allowed me to learn how to stand on my feet and be a self-supporting woman, in my own right, an adult, grown up, and it feels so good. Nothing feels as good as this abstinence feels. Nothing feels better than this. No puff could ever be what this is to me. So, big sigh of life, and thank you very much. I think I've come to the point where I should pass the mic back, and I'll thank you all from the bottom of my heart, and I hope you've received something from what I've shared. I know my story isn't different. Isn't that different from anybody else's? And you've all been, well, you know, I see friends in this room today. You mean the world to me. Even if I, you know, if I don't talk to you for weeks, months at a time, you're just never going to leave my heart. You never will. You're always in my life. You're in my day. And to the friends that I've just met today, and you know,
it's the same, because we're bound together by this horrific addiction, and yet we are cemented together forever by the solution. And it is so good to be here and to share in the celebration of this life that we have together now. So I will do a big fat pass. And thank you so much, Lydia, for your service today. And love you, Gary and PJ and all the rest of you. Okay. And Chick, where's my friend Chick? Is Chicky here? I don't know if Chick's here, but boy, Chick used to ring the bell. Do you remember that Tinkerbell? Does anyone remember the Tinkerbell? She used to ring a bell when we would celebrate time. Anyway, yeah, the bell. That was a lot of fun. Boy, did we have a lot of fun in there. We're not a glum lot, are we? No, we don't. But anyway, that's enough. Thank you. I'm hogging the mic now. No, I'll give it back. Thank you. See ya.